Hey guys, we're back. Another episode of Smart Brand Marketing. Today with me, I have Dom Capucilli, and he helps transition small companies and startups into something that's more scalable, and that's through sales and storytelling. I would say probably some marketing and helping owners figure out how to organize the teams, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's the marketing and sales tend to have like a very small line of demarcation, or a blurry line of demarcation, I guess you would say. So I think it's all about how you're telling the story of your business. And I don't really care whether you call it marketing or you call it sales, but it all goes back to kind of your brand story and the story that you're telling your customers.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I worked for a lot of big companies back in the days, and sales and marketing couldn't be more far apart. You know, like they, we just were never on the same page. They had a different vision and we had a different reality.
So let's talk about it. So what was the sales team's mentality and what was your marketing team's mentality that made everything so far apart?
Basically, what we, the way we spoke with the customers and what the customers wanted, was not understood by the marketing team. At all.
By the marketing team, you said?
By the marketing team, yeah. So the papers that they gave us to sell with, and we were not supposed to make any deviations from that, the customers looked at them and threw them in the garbage. So we all, did our own sales letters and sales copy and worked with that. Like, we couldn't be farther apart, Mm-hmm. The scripts didn't work at all. Like, I don't know where they were from, maybe from some little town in Connecticut, but selling in Brooklyn, that shit did not work at all. And we had a couple times where they sent these marketing guys with us on a sales presentation, and we let them do it, and they couldn't sell a thing. And the people just didn't want to talk to them. It just couldn't be farther apart, And there was no story being told. This is why it's interesting what you're teaching these companies. And I think it's definitely the right move, because we didn't sell stories, We assumed that everyone knows our company. Like, for example, I worked at Nestle. We assumed everyone knows Nestle and Poland Spring or whatever it was. And there was no story. It was just like, do you want to buy this? And here are the benefits and, things like that. It wasn't about the story. There was no story involved.
Well, I might disagree with you. I think you were telling a story, and I don't know that you knew that you were. It was probably just like a pattern recognition thing from a good salesperson.
Well, it was. So I'll give you an example, because I know what you're going into it. The marketing team just told us to sell that way. The way we actually sold is by telling them a story of a neighbor who got this thing and how their life improved and, their day-to-day life and things like that. So we did tell that type of a story, but it's not what the marketing team told us to do. They were actually against it, but it worked.
Yeah, I mean, I think the why marketing, there's many reasons why sales gets a bad rap, and some of them are fair, some of them are not. I would generally would say that bad salespeople get a bad rap, but I think that bad marketing gets a bad rap because it's not focused on conversion, much of it. You end up in a situation where the marketing team does all of this work without talking to any customers. And they like create this entire brand story, brand image, and it's all based upon these people who are sitting in a room, or your marketing agency that's sitting in a room, and they're not out there talking to customers. They're just saying, well, this is cool, that is cool, this is how this should come across. Here's what the mood of our brand is, and all that. And that stuff's certainly important, but the way that you if you're a conversion based marketer, the way that you really want to think about that is what are the reasons that my customers are buying? And then the story that you're telling, or the brand story that you're telling, needs to be customer focused rather than focused on you and what's great about you. And because nobody really buys for that reason. People buy because you can help them solve a problem, fill a need, achieve a goal. And the thing that you were doing kind of knowingly, or in some cases, for some of your people unknowingly, was you were telling them an anecdote that they could put themselves in the shoes of. And that's how you sell to people. That's one way to sell to people, because when you tell them somebody else's story that's very, very much like them, they're much more likely to buy from you because you're talking about and care about your story because you're talking about something that actually matters to them, not, you know, the 50 different things that your widget can do.
Yeah. Can you give an example of one of these stories from your customers and like the components, the way you would lay it out, so maybe people listening can get an idea for how this works?
Yeah, sure. So we can go into like, I can give you an anecdote and then we can go into what you actually need to do within that. One that I like to tell is that I used to work at ZocDoc. You're from New York, so I'm sure you're familiar with ZocDoc.
Yeah.
So they're, for anybody who's not, they're an online appointment booking application for doctors. And it's kind of like Expedia for doctors. So you can book your appointments online. Very cool product. Anyway, we sell to optometrists, eye doctors. So I would go, you know, I remember my first couple of weeks, it was kind of a boiler room environment, at least when I was there. And I remember getting real excited because I had an appointment with my first optometrist. And I got on the phone and I said, listen, we got a bunch of new patients. They're all young. They're going to stay with you forever. It's going to be great. And, here's like, let me show you how the platform works. And the guy like hung up on me before I could do anything. Didn't say a word, just hung up. I said, okay. I said, all right. Well, that's interesting. So I called him back and I said, hey, we got disconnected. And he's like, we didn't get disconnected. And I was like, okay, do you not, you know, well, before you hang up on me again, can you tell me, you know, do you not want a new young patient base? And this kind, kind man said, you know, if I get any more young new patients, I'm going to be out of business. Because let me tell you what happens. These young new patients come in, they get their eye exam with me, so they get their prescription, which I don't make any money on. Then they go into my store and they pick out the frames that they want, which is where I make all my money. And then they don't buy them. They go home and buy them on the internet for 40% cheaper than I'm selling them for. So my business is in peril because of all of your young new patients.
Wow.
And I said, oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So I got off the phone with this guy and then I went back and started to do a little bit of research. And then I got on my next appointment with an optometrist. And the first thing I said before I went into anything, I said, listen, I'm trying to figure out if you're right for us. But tell me if this is happening to you. You're getting a lot of patients who are coming in. They're getting their eye exam with you, and they're going and picking out the frames they want. And you know they're not buying them, and you know they're going on the internet and finding them wholesale somewhere. And the guy immediately said, "Yes, that's exactly what's happening to me." And like the switch that happened in him, from like me selling him to him being interested in the way that I could help him solve his problem, was immediate. So then I said, "Well, you know, this problem's not going away, as I'm sure you're aware. So like kind of putting your head in the sand about it is not really a long-term strategy if you want to keep your business and keep the success of the business that you have. So the only thing that you can do is take better insurances, because when somebody has a really good vision insurance, they usually get a stipend for their frames for $250 or something like that. And when they don't care where they get them because they're not paying the bills, so they're going to go with what's most convenient, which is your store. And then I said, interestingly, you know, so you should do that whether you work with me or not, or whether you work with ZocDoc or not. But interestingly, that's one of the reasons that optometrists love ZocDoc, is that at the time anyway, you were allowed to cherry pick which insurances you accepted from ZocDoc. So you could take anybody who came in the door, but you could kind of always be plugging away with ZocDoc patients with these better insurances. So eventually what that will do is kind of change the makeup of your practice and help you fight against this wave of people who are buying glasses wholesale. I sold that optometrist immediately, and I sold every optometrist I talked to for the next 2 years. And, you know, I did it because I met them where they were at, and I told them their story, and I didn't tell them my story.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. And that's what I do with every business. I think, you know, the difference between companies that make it are ones who are actually able to do this. because there's no easier way to do a copy for the landing page, for example, than just taking all the things that your customers tell you and have problems with and just putting it on there. Like, don't be cute, don't be creative, don't be too entertaining, maybe a little bit, but not too much, and just put exactly what the customers are talking to you about on the landing page, and that works. That works the best.
Yeah, I mean, people actually don't buy from you because of you and because of your solution. They buy from you because they believe that you understand the problem that they have. That's more important than if they believe their solution can help you. Interestingly, you wouldn't think that at first look, but it's actually there's a lot of verified research backing that up.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So if you there's when you're trying to convince someone of anything, right? Let's take it outside of sales. If I walk up to you and let's say I am interested in someone at a bar, and I walk up to that person at a bar and I tell them and I give them my resume, and I just say, hey, you know, listen, I have my own company. I work out a lot. I work really hard. I'm going to be a great father to our children. By the way, my name's Dom. What do you think? You know, if I do that, that person is going to be pretty turned off by that. But if I went and spoke to them and I started asking them about them and didn't say a word about me. Let's say I said absolutely nothing about me, and I talked to them for an hour and just kind of really learned who they were and what they were about. That person's reaction to me is going to be like, wow, I really like that guy. And they don't know anything about me. You know, they actually like the fact that I've allowed them to express who they are. People like to talk about themselves and their issues and whatever's going on with them. And that's in both personal and business. And so if you really want people to like you, listen to them and listen to what they have to say. And you actually don't have to say all that much. And they will they will find a reason to like you because you've made them feel heard.
Yeah, I think that's definitely key. The listening part, right? For a sales guy.
Most salespeople actually spend, the average salesperson spends 2/3 of a call talking. The most successful salespeople spend 1/3 of a call talking. So there's a huge difference within there of what that actually, what that implies about the way that you're conducting your calls.
Yeah, don't be afraid of silence, right?
Definitely not. And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah, those like two
therapists.
Are key.
Therapists are, therapists use silence. Good therapists use silence really well.
Is that the thing that the therapist told you that helped you with sales?
No, it's not. That was that's different. Although it is, I do think that that's probably another tip that I picked up, which is just like in those two, when someone says their first sentence, what happens is most people wait less than 2 seconds to fill that void of silence. And if you wait a little longer than 2 seconds, people will kind of get nervous and tell you. And usually what happens is that second thing that they say when you gave them a chance to, when you were silent and just kind of let them talk, is actually the thing that is like the meat that they kind of were dancing around in their first sentence. It's really interesting.
Nice. You know, since you help smaller companies transition into bigger ones and scale, let's talk about lead generation. You know, because I know that's very important for a lot of small companies. They don't have the resources. Some have that scarcity mindset. What advice do you give them?
Yeah, I mean, so lead generation is a topic that varies. That varies from business to business, right? If I'm selling a $20 widget, that's entirely different than if I'm selling $50,000 contracts for the year. So you have to have a different approach. So I would say one of the things that's key is understanding the approach that works best for you. And what I would say is most small businesses rely far too much on their warm network. A lot of people, most people who start businesses are technical or subject matter experts, and they have big networks, and those networks kind of launch them into success at the beginning. But there's a couple problems with that. The first problem is that runs out. You can't really scale a company beyond a certain stage of like a lifestyle business with just your warm network. I mean, some people have, but it's very difficult. A lot of people like to think that a product grows itself, and it doesn't. There's concerted effort that needs to be put behind that. So you really need to design an outbound system that helps you. You first need to know what the profile of those target customers is, and then you need to be able to find where they are and approach them cold and have the skill sets to approach them cold. The second piece that I find is difficult is that a lot of entrepreneurs, and hope everybody cover their ears and get the insults out of the way when I say this, are not as good at sales as they actually think they are. And the reason is they live in a bit of a reality distortion field. Because as I mentioned, when they start a business, they usually have networks in that industry, and those people are much more patient with them than someone that they're talking to cold or much more interested, right? This is someone who has started a business. You probably have a previous relationship. You started your business. You have a previous relationship with them. They know what you're all about. So like the way that I would consider that is those warm leads are layups, and you need to become a better three-point shooter, which is what outbound sales is. It takes a lot of concerted effort, and you need to have your form needs to be right, and you need to practice, and you need to be doing it consistently in order to be really good at it.
What do you mean by the skill set in setting up these outbound systems?
Yeah, so there's no consistency in, well, A, the skill set kind of my mantra, as I mentioned, is don't talk about you and your solution. Talk about your prospect and their problems. So that's kind of the axiom, right? That's the bedrock of everything that I teach my clients. But there's different mediums of that message. So like most people send an outbound email, and that outbound email is a three paragraph ad about them, and usually has some weird attachments or like pictures in it, and nobody ever responds to it. So like people think email is dead, but email is not dead. Bad email is dead. So you need to have, there are very important skill sets and approaches and strategies that are in line with best practices that are working for the best salespeople out there. So like you as the founder, it's very hard to know what that is because you spent 10 years becoming an expert in your craft, and that craft isn't sales. So it's kind of ignorant to think that you would be able to be an expert at sales today, just because the burden falls on your shoulders. So what I always tell people is even if they're not working with me to create an entire sale consistency in their sales strategy, their system and their messaging, they need to go out and get training because they need to be the ones out there selling their company, especially in the early stages.
So what's a good email look like? And you can give me an example of like some business that you're very familiar with, but I would like to hear this. Like, what are the components? What does the flow of that email look like?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that's nice about my background, which is kind of a storytelling structure background, is that I've been able to demystify some of these. So although the content of every email that I work with my clients to write, or the every email that they write, is different, the structure of any good outbound email to someone you've never spoken to before is basically universal. So let's talk about what that is. So the first piece, there's four main pieces. And the first piece is why I'm reaching out specifically to you, right? So that's I refer to this as a relevance hook. So this is the most relevant thing that you know about that person. And it's very important to understand the definition of relevant is important, important to the matter at hand. A lot of people try and like name drop or do things that aren't actually important to the reason why you're reaching out, which is to create a business relationship. So if whatever information you can find about the person that's going to make your email stand out is the first piece. So that's why I'm reaching out specifically to you. Then the next piece is what I want. So this is the question that you're going to ask. And the way that I talk about this is, or the way that to do this is, like, you don't make an assumption here. You ask a question. So think about your value proposition and the areas that it impacts. You flip that to the problem that you solve, and then you think, and then you ask them how they're solving that problem. So Tom, what is the value proposition of a broom?
Keep the room clean.
Okay, so let's flip that. What problem does a broom solve?
Clean up a dirty room.
Okay, dirty room, right? So, hi, Jim. Wondering how you're dealing with, or wondering how you're currently cleaning your dirty room in 2019. That's the question, right? I'd like to discuss, hey, if you're open to it, I'd like to discuss how you're approaching your sales strategy in 2019, how you're dealing with X. You bring up the problem and you ask them how they're dealing with it currently. That's the second part, right? Third part is why you should give it to me. So I asked you a question, why should you give me the answer? And this is where you actually get to talk about yourself. The reason I ask is I do this and I help people who have the problem that I just asked you about. And then number four is how to give it to me. This is the easiest part, but a lot of people screw it up. And it's just, if someone's interested in what you're saying, what's the exact next step that they need to take? Or what's the next step that you two will take together? So I always say something along the lines of, would you be open to a call early next week to discuss if our value matches your needs? So that's really the key to the email. That's kind of the structure piece of it. Why I'm reaching out specifically to you, what I want, how to give it to me, and I'm sorry, what I want, why you should give it to me, and then how to give it to me. And the tone, it should be short. It should be a couple hundred words long max. And the tone should be conversational. You know, the people that you're reaching out to, they're people. So it's really important to not write them something very, very formal.
We talked a little bit about the scarcity mindset, right? And mm-hmm. How do you think that leads to poor business decisions? And not feeling in control of your business.
Yeah. So, I mean, this comes down to, if you're depending on leads to walk through your door, you're going to have a more desperate feeling. You're going to have a more desperate approach, right? So if you're saying, well, let's see what kind of inbound traffic comes in, or we have to turn up our marketing, which can definitely lead to more sales. That's an avenue that you should use. But you're not actually the one in control of your business, because you're not saying, you don't know what you're not actually proactively reaching out to people to close business. So you're depending on the people who find you and then self-select. So that's the problem with having kind of an inbound only system, which most entrepreneurs, especially in their like seed and series A place, well, seed mostly, but have that attitude of like, okay, we'll just turn up the marketing, because a lot of them just don't like sales and don't know how to do it effectively, especially an outbound system. But the problem with that is you end up taking business you shouldn't take. I don't take on clients I don't need to take, because I know that I can go get clients if I need them, if I need to do that, because that's something, that's a skill set that I've learned, you know. And And what that creates for me is better business decisions, because when I'm talking to a client and they're really, really resistant, and I kind of have to push them to understand some basic things that if they don't, you know, some basic things that I know aren't in line, if I'm thinking that might be my only opportunity to close some business in the next month or so, I'll do anything I can to close that business. But if I know that I can go out and get business, you know, if I put the effort into it, it just changes the types of business, the type of business that you'll take, and you'll start thinking more about the long-term smart decisions, that will help form a lasting business, rather than I need this money or we're going to have problems in the next 6 months. And what happens if that person doesn't walk through the door again?
So you have a high value offer, I presume, just by, you know, consulting and things like that. How do you find clients so easily then? Like, what are your tactics?
My tactics to find my own clients?
Yeah.
So I get a lot of referrals because we do good work. But when I'm looking for clients, I know exactly who my target customer is. I have a couple of different target customers, and generally in understanding them is kind of the first step, right? So I know that recently funded companies generally have a directive to grow their sales and scale their sales. And I know that founders almost don't know how to, and always do not know how to do that. And then I also know that companies that kind of hit that point, usually like 3 to 4 years in, where their warm networks are running out and they need to grow and they're worried about it. So what I look for is who matches that profile. And then I go about reaching out to them using the strategy that I just mentioned, which is okay, this company was funded in 2000. This company was funded in 2018, in May of 2018. It's probably a good bet that they're looking to grow their sales, and they need to do that to get to their next round. So then I reach out to them and I just ask them if that's the case. So it's really not all that complicated. It's really about, you need to know the profile of your target customer, and you need to know the problems that they're likely to be experiencing. And if you reach out to someone and you ask them if they're having those problems, and they are, you're going to get a lot of answers. My outbound campaigns, even my automated outbound campaigns, have upwards to a 15 to 20% response rate, which is, you know, an average commercial campaign has less than 1%. And it's because, you know, nobody likes a cold email until you hit on a problem that they have, and then they'll answer it. So I'm doing really good work with understanding who I'm targeting. And that's what I work with my clients to do. You know, you're not going to be able to, not every cold email that you send out, people are going to answer. But you can give yourself the best chance by doing these things that are in line with best practices.
What's your favorite platform? Is it cold emailing or something like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter? How do you usually reach out to people?
Yeah, so I mean, maybe I'm a bit old school. I definitely think there's a place for social selling. But I use it as, I still think someone's business email is the best way to get in contact with them. And it depends on your product, right? So if you're running like, if you're doing a B2C product, I would actually encourage you that is like highly visual, you know, or affordable, I would encourage more of a social media, like Instagram outreach, because it's much easier to connect with the people that you're trying to connect with there. But for B2B, which is most of the companies that I work with, there's nothing better than a business email. And I think that it gets a bad rap now because there definitely is a lot of trash that's out there. But when you send a good business email, you're still doing well. And I use more, what I use more so is social media for research purposes. And then as kind of a backup if I can't get someone's email or they're not answering by email. The phone still works pretty well too, guys. You know, like everybody hates it, but when you place a call, especially for C-level executives, when you place a call into an office following up on an email that you have, you become a person rather than just rather than just spam. You're a person who's trying to find another person, and it works well even if you only get somebody's executive assistant, because they'll go back and read your email, and that's really all that you can ask for.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are so comfortable with texting now. No one really makes calls anymore, right?
Yeah, I mean, I hate it when anybody calls me personally. But, you know, I don't think you want to call somebody and then put them on the spot and start pitching them. That's annoying. but I think you can call them and ask and follow up on the written correspondence that you had with them and see if they see if there's a time that you can speak with them at a later date. It's kind of like a call to set up a meeting. Don't just call people and start pitching them. It's terrible. It happens all the time. And, you know, rightfully, you're going to get a lot of rejection and feel terrible about yourself. And also, you're not going to get a lot of sales that way.
Yeah, I used to do cold calling too. In one of the businesses I worked for. But yeah, it's funny because a lot of comedians now, they say, you know, if anyone calls and doesn't text, that's a psychopath, you know?
Oh yeah, John Oliver said something about that the other night. He had a, on his show, he's like, if you're calling, you know, I don't know what's wrong with you. You're terrible. You're an absolute terrible human being, which in my personal life, I tend to agree.
I would too. Yeah. That's when you mentioned calls. I'm like, you know, it's a different time, but you know, with the right people, you're right. You know, in the, higher positions, I think it still works.
Yeah. I mean, what a good strategy or a good tip is that you send a couple of emails. And if you have the time, you call up the day after or the same day that you send the second email. And usually you'll get an executive assistant if your targets are like kind of high C levels. And that person will, and all you have to do is say to that person, hey, listen, you know, because most people treat executive assistants like shit. And if you're just nice to them, you can get a lot further. And they're the gatekeepers, you know. So you say, hey, listen, you know, I shot an email over to Jim. And I just wanted to make sure that he had received it or see if he had a chance to read it yet. And they don't know that the email is a sales email. So it's obviously their responsibility. So, and then she said, well, okay, well, what is it? I'll look through his inbox. And they say, well, would it be easier if I just resent it to you and then you could print it out and put it on his desk so he has it? And the person and the executive assistant's always like, that would be great. thank you so much for doing that. That like, that is getting read. That email is getting read by the people that you're looking for, which is really access is the biggest issue at the highest levels. And that'll add to your positive conversion rate. It'll probably double it if you're able to, if your reps have the time to do that, or if you have the time to do that.
That's great advice. Dom, where can people find you?
So you can go to my website, www.thecleancell. That's S-E-L-L. .com. And you can find me there. You can also email me directly at dom@thecleancell.com. One other thing, I'm happy to offer this to anyone, who reaches out. We have a 7-step, pitch structure that, you know, as I mentioned with the email that we were talking about earlier,
yeah.
The structure for a good pitch, is pretty universal. And for like a good intro call script is pretty universal. And I actually put kind of a Mad Libs fill in the blank for each piece of that about instructing you how instructing clients how to actually do that. It's what I work with my clients on to fill in. So it's something that hopefully will be useful for everyone. So I'm happy to offer that. Just have them reach out and mention that I was on the show or that they heard me from the show.
Cool, man. Yeah, I'll put some of this stuff in the show notes, and thank you for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.